Hey, everybody, I'm Chris Fafalius, and I'm the producer of Krista Makes a Podcast and the host of the One Hit Thunder podcast.
And I'm Matt Kelly, host of Horror Movie Night and the producer slash the head of content for the Geekscape Podcasting Network.
Between the two of us, we have, believe it or not, 25 years of podcasting experience, and we want to help you start your own podcast.
We know podcasting, and we want to share that knowledge with you.
So whether you're new to podcasting or you want some feedback on your currently active podcast, we want to help.
Or perhaps you're just overwhelmed with all of the editing work. Well, we can help you with that also.
You can check out our website at weknowpodcasting.com for more information.
We're excited to help your podcasting dreams become a reality. Episode of Horror Movie Night. This week we are talking about 1985's Day of the Dead, as picked by Brian. And I have reason to believe, I didn't do any research on this, but it's a horror movie, it's 1985, there's a chance that this movie came out on my birthday, I'm just saying. So, Brian, besides the fact that it may have come out on your brother's birthday, why did you pick Day of the Dead?
This is another one that you wouldn't let me watch because you said it wasn't good.
I don't know how accurate that is, because I have always enjoyed Day of the Dead.
No, you didn't.
Yeah.
You specifically said it's not good, and then you changed your mind, which is fine. It's good. It shows growth, but you didn't like it early on. But like the weird thing was like you were like, don't waste your time watching Day of the Dead. It's not good. But you didn't stop me from seeing Land of the Dead in theaters. So...
Like, I couldn't stop you from making a decision to go into the theaters to see a movie that I wasn't willing to go to the theaters to see.
I just feel like maybe it was a budget thing, but I feel like Screaming Mad George didn't get to work as much as I was hoping he was going to work in this movie. Like, so, I wish I didn't see all the effects before I saw the movie, because it was like I just waited an hour and 10 minutes for those 20 minutes.
Yeah, you know? So here's it is a budgetary thing, actually. Mm-hmm. This was like the one fun fact that I learned about this movie. And this is another one of those reasons why, like, love him or hate him, George Romero is a fucking G, right? Is at this point, he had dealt with bullshit with the MPAA nonstop, right? And the studio was like, you know what? Look, I know you've had a rough go about. How about you do another Of the Dead movie? We know you love doing those Of the Dead movies. We're going to give you $7 million to do an Of the Dead movie, but it has to be R-rated. And George Romero was like, I'll do it for 3.5 if I don't ever have to submit it to the MPAA. Yeah, and they were like, okay. So he was just like, I want to do whatever the fuck I want to do, and I'll do it at half the cost just to not have to deal with the headache of a ratings board being like, ooh, that's too gory, you have to cut that. So they just actively decided to release this unrated in, like, the limited theaters that it could be released in, as opposed to, like, going through, like, the MPAA and having to do, like, a series of cuts to, like, trim out the gore scenes.
See, I feel like I'd be bummed if I was around in the 80s, because, like, you see a George A. Romero movie, and you see it's unrated.
You expect more than what you get.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, I think that this movie... What I like about this movie is that I think that he accidentally stumbled into social consciousness in his first two Of the Dead movies. like Night of Living Dead, like it's really held up as this like this tentpole for what it has to say about like racism in the 60s. But like the problem with that was that the character was never written to be black. So like that all kind of accidentally happened when they cast the actor that they cast.
But not when you interview him in 2020, dude. That was his plan from the gate. That's why I love it, dude. It's like the woke Hollywood fucking production companies that are like, we're more inclusive. It's like, you guys were running the show 10 years ago when you weren't doing it either.
Day of the Dead, there's like little elements where I'm like, I actually see what he's doing. Like, there's one of the elements that I really, really love in this movie. The fact that Rhodes is clean shaven in the movie, I think is such a cool, like subtle thing about his character, because everybody else has like given up. They're like, the world is ending. This is the end of it. But like, he's so still associating himself with like, no, we're in the military. Things are going to get back to normal, that he's still like waking up every day, getting clean shaven, like doing what you have to do when you're in the military, while all of the other soldiers have like just fucked off and let themselves grow beards and like outgrow their uniforms and stuff. And I think like little details like that are really interesting, like character pieces in a movie that's essentially a mess that you're just watching for the last 20 minutes. But I do think that there's a little bit more like, I think that there's a more attention to detail in this one than there was in Night or Dawn. Like, Night was like a bunch of dudes in Pittsburgh just throwing shit at a wall to make a movie. And like, the original Dawn of the Dead could use like 40 minutes cut out of it easily. Like, it's, I don't need the pie fight in the middle of Dawn of the Dead.
And just the best looking zombies, for sure.
See, I think Day has the best looking zombies, honestly.
That's what we're agreeing on.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about Dawn had the best looking
zombies. Dawn just was blue. They just painted the face is blue.
Like, the very first zombie you see has like no lower jaw, and it looks fucking awesome. Like, it's just like a tongue dangling out of like an empty hole, and I'm like, all right, here we go. And then I wasn't going to see a zombie again except for Bud for like a good 30-40 minutes.
Bud, I couldn't get over the fact that he just looked like Brian Regan doing a bit the entire time.
Yeah. This is actually George Romero's favorite of the Dead movies, he said. And he said that after he did a bunch of the sequels, like Land and Diary, so he even knew he was phoning that shit in on his dying days. The two things I remember about this movie is I remember Uncle Craig had the VHS tape, and it was another one of those VHS tapes similar to Hellraiser, where the back of it was not like shying away from how much gore was in the movie. So it was one of those ones where I was like, ooh, I don't know if I want to watch that. Like, I was a little baby. Even when I was getting into horror movies, a little baby.
The back had the chest open, right?
I think so. Or it could be the Dead Alive. So many VHS box covers were like, someone's chest gets ripped open, let's throw it on the back of the box.
Yeah. Well, I don't think that was on the Day of the Dead one, because I know for a fact that the Dead Alive box art was so graphic to me, and it was the ribs getting ripped out,
rib
cage getting ripped out. And I think it also is like,
it's the finger poking through the guy's stomach is the other one in the back.
Yeah,
of it.
And, like, and those were, I was like,
it's gnarly.
That's why I didn't watch Dead Alive until college, because I was like, I can't handle that. But I mean, it's just so, I didn't understand that splatter horror is like
just so cartoonish in its presentation.
I was like, this is so realistic. No, not at all.
But the other thing I remember about this movie was that I finally got around, this is why I don't think I told you not to see it, and if I did, it was probably because I hadn't seen it either. But the first time I saw it was, I got it in the mail through Netflix, and I popped it into my DVD player in grandmom's basement. This was the year that I was living in grandmom's basement. The movie starts, and the first like 3 minutes of this movie was sampled on the Gorillaz album, on like one of my favorite songs by the Gorillaz, M1A1, where it's not like when I say, oh, they sampled it, where like they took a beat, like they took a piece of it and turned it into a beat. Literally the entire 2 minutes opening up to this track that turns into just like a quick like 90 second punk song is just the like dun 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 theme, with a guy going, hello, hello, hello. And when I used to listen to that album, I'm like, what the fuck is up with this intro? And then seeing Dawn of the Dead, or Day of the Dead, it made me more confused. Like, why were they like, let's just take the first 2 minutes of Day of the Dead and just put it at the start of this song for no explainable reason? and then just do our quick song where the chorus is just like la 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 la, hey. It's a great jam, though.
You guys aren't selling me on Day of the Dead or Gorillaz right now.
Gorillaz is like seven bands. So Day of the Dead.
So I have a couple notes about Day of the Dead. Very few. But that alligator at the beginning was a pretty nice touch. And I'm pretty shocked that you glossed over that for the zombie with his tongue lolling out. Because, I mean, yeah, I that is the thing that I liked. Actually, I think that that's one of the only things I liked about this movie. Because this is not my first watch.
But it's definitely your last.
Well, if I have to watch it again, I will be very, very upset. Because it's so fucking boring. Like, it's just... I hate people yelling. I hate...
This is like the combination of all of the things Scott doesn't like.
Yeah, there's a lot of fucking gunshots in small spaces. Everybody will be, you know, deaf as fuck. And maybe that's why they're yelling. But everybody's yelling. Everybody's on edge. No one is a redeemable character. Like, literally everybody's a bad person in this movie. It kind of... I feel like, yes, this is kind of feeding off of the Dawn of the Dead feeling of, like, that hopelessness of... The world's over and, you know, everybody's just at each other's throats and humans are the real monsters. I get the fucking allegory, right? But
yeah.
I feel like Dawn of the Dead, or Day of the Dead, rather, is so much more dour than Dawn of the Dead because of just, like, yeah, Dawn of the Dead has the fucking pie fight and, you know, just it has a little bit more to it. But what I want to get to is the fact that Day of the Dead really, I think, is the final mold for all of the apocalyptic movies, like zombie movies, like even 28 Days Later.
Well, I guess that's what I was going to ask you is, like, is it necessarily that Day of the Dead is a quote-unquote bad movie, or is it that it set the template that we've seen, like, a million times now?
I mean,
that, like,
both.
Even though it was kind of the one that got there first, it, like, it's ruined so much other stuff.
Well, I don't think it's ruined some other stuff. It's since it's the trope, you know? Like, since it really is the concept... of humans are the real monsters in a zombie apocalypse. I get it. But that's been the truth since Night of the Living Dead. Like, it's always the whole point of, like, at least for Romero, the vast majority of what he talks about is the zombies are just a set piece. They're kind of a looming dread, you know, and an ever-present danger. But humans are another danger, and society is a breakdown. But it's not fun to fucking watch that.
It's almost like, I'm sure someone else has investigated this years ago, but, like, I almost wonder if it's a weird version of, like, you know, the biblical concept of, like, the rapture, right? Like, all of the good people in the world get raptured to heaven, and then we're left with, like, the shittiest people.
That has to be it.
Because I think the element of, like, here's the fact. Like, I consider myself a pretty nice person. I think both of you are very nice people. I don't think we would survive a zombie apocalypse. Like, I think that, like,
no.
Like, we don't have that, like, killer instinct. So it's almost like that aspect of the movie. Like, I think that that's almost what the point is, like, the only people who could survive something like this are, like, the biggest, most selfish pieces of shit.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense, because my biggest issue with, like, what of The Walking Dead, I never watched The Walking Dead in order. Jade watched it and I would catch episodes here and there. And I, like, my biggest issue with it is how awful all the characters are, because it's like the three of us right now, right? We don't not rape people because we live in a law-enforced country. We don't rape people because it's a terrible thing to do. So, like, once, like, the world ends, the fact that everyone becomes a rapist is just, like, so, like, in Walking Dead, 70% of the characters, it's like, if they're alone with a woman, they're going to rape them. And I'm like, I don't think that's how the world is.
I would hope that's not how the world is. But also, like, what does that say about the fact that that is a hugely popular show and that men and women both are totally fine with watching a bunch of violence against women? I feel like that was a part of the comic book, too. And that's why I never watched the show, because I read the first three collections or something back in college and I hated it.
Yeah, I've read way more of Walking Dead than I enjoyed. Like, I think I got
it's because
to, like,
you're
issue like 120. But even then I was like, I can't do this anymore. Like, it just, quick shout out to Robert Kirkman, whose better comic book has been turned into a cartoon series on Amazon Prime, Invincible. But Walking Dead, I just, like, it got to a point where it was like watching How I Met Your Mother, right? Like, you know that there's an ending planned, but they keep getting renewed for more seasons, and they don't have enough story to fill it, so they just keep telling the same story every season. And that's basically what happened with Walking Dead, was it was like, well, fuck, they want us to keep making issues. Let's just have them find another civilization of people that they cause havoc in and destroy, and then we'll do the last issue. Oh, you want us to do another year? They find another civilization of people. And it was just like by the fourth civilization of people that they found, I was like, there seems to be a lot of fucking people alive in Walking Dead before our six main characters come and ruin it.
Like, yeah. If I had a show like that, what I would do is by season four, zombies win. The world is over. It's all zombies. Then season five would just pretty much be Leave It to Beaver, but in an all zombie town. That's what I would do.
I love it.
I would get canceled.
Fucking Fido. But... exactly what I was.
So I do want to talk about toward the end of this movie.
It's the best part.
Because the movie really ramps up. You get a ton of really gory, gnarly deaths towards the end. Two things that jumped out at me when I was watching it this time. First of all, I don't know what it is, but any time that, like, a human being has to amputate another human being's body to stop, like, an infection from spreading, it fucks me up. I
love,
like,
how the guy, like, wakes up as she's burning his stump, and he's like,
Yeah. Like, no! But then the other thing is, there's the one scene where they're literally tearing a guy apart. I know, which scene? But they rip off his head, and the way that they modulate his voice as the vocal cords are being torn is so good.
Yeah.
Like, that is amazing.
That was a great attention to detail. I noticed that too. I was like, wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's a hell of a movie, especially towards the end.
Like, it is. It gets hell wild. Is as a movie, yes.
All right, so what double features do you guys have for this movie that we just barely talked about?
I mean, I think that's no surprise. I'm going to pair with the best zombie movie ever made, Shaun of the Dead.
I disagree on best zombie movie ever made. But...
best zombie movie ever made. Ever.
Wait, so what do you think, Matt?
I think it's the same one that you think is the best zombie movie.
But that wouldn't exist if it wasn't the pastiche. Neither of those, Shaun of the Dead or Return of the Living Dead, would exist without them being pastiches of Night of the Living Dead.
No, for sure. I think of, like, authentic zombie movies, it is Day of the Dead for me. I do really love this movie.
You think this is the best, huh?
For authentic, look at that look. He said authentic zombie movies, not like the authentic joke ones. Zombie movies.
Okay.
Yeah, not like the comedy ones.
I couldn't even imagine, like, what the quote-unquote best authentic or not fun zombie movie is.
I mean, I won't lie, I do really enjoy watching the original Night of the Living Dead.
I do too, it's fun.
It's Day of the Dead that I just can't, like, the original Day of the Dead, I just cannot sit through. And
do you
I
mean
know
Dawn?
That it's great,
Dawn.
But, or Dawn, yeah, the original Dawn. It's just so long. It's so
tedious. The remake is a lot of fun, though.
Yeah, the remake's great.
I haven't seen it in a few
fucking,
years, but
it's got
Richard Cheese.
Here's the thing is Phil Dunphy's in that. I didn't know who he was when it came out, but the very end, you know, like after everybody fucking dies, spoiler alert for a 2005 film that you probably have seen before. Everybody dies at the end, as is typical of most zombie movies. And then they're like rolling this extra footage over top of the end credits. And there's this part where Phil Dunphy has like some like bikini clad women on him or something, and he goes, I run a tight ship, and I think about it all the time, but I can't say that I can't say that to anybody because it doesn't, the context of that is so absurd.
Yeah. All right, Scott, how about you? What's your double feature?
I'm gonna go with another movie that is subterranean but is way more fun. I'm gonna go with Graveyard Shift because, you know, it's a lot more fun. It's got a gigantic mutant rat bat.
So I'm gonna go with a wild one, but as I was watching this, I was like, you know what movie this makes me want to watch? The Thing. John Carpenter's The Thing. Just a bunch of military guys pissed off at each other, trapped in a shitty situation. Much better movie, crazy special effects. The Thing all the way.
And see, I feel like that's a great suggestion, because even though The Thing is equally dour, it is so much more fun to watch. And I don't
It's so much more fun. Well, because it's I think it's because, again, we were talking about how much we love the zombie designs, but, like, with the exception of the opening shot and the one scene where they go into the laboratory and there's, like, the body that's literally just a brain stem on a body.
Yeah, that's a cool scene.
Yeah. You don't see anything else until the last, like, 15 minutes. Like, it's one of those classic movies, and we can talk about this next week as well, where the film really thinks that we care more about the human interactions than the monsters in the movie, and false. So, Brian, what's something that you watched you want to tell people to check out?
Before that, I do want to piggyback off that. I do just want to give a shout out to horror movies of that era. That just like my generation was like, let's take these classics and remake them. And like The Little Shop of Horrors, The Thing, Invaders from Mars. Like, it's just like, wow, what a cool idea that had such a shit budget. So it's actually a really bad movie. Let's remake that. Yeah. We should get back to that. But I will say, so Jade, I was left home alone last night. Jade went. Uh-oh. Yeah. Jade went
the
to
way
her
that
friend's
you present
house.
That term is just fucking great.
Yeah, so she went to her friend's house for one last hurrah, and I did what any man would do when he's home alone. I watched a 1955 French thriller called Diabolik.
Diabolik is great.
Diabolik.
What a good fucking movie. Yeah, Jade enjoyed my recap of it. I was like, I watched this really good movie. And then she's like, tell me everything that happened because I'm not going to watch it. And she was literally sitting there like this, just so interested as I looked at the movie.
If you guys were on the phone, she would have been on her bed with her rotary telephone, twirling it in her fingers, and her back legs would be kicking in the air. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, Brian, tell me more about Diabolik.
Yeah. And like, I was so bad at telling it. She was still interested in it. Like, I was like almost at the end and I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot to tell you. And this retired police commissioner came in about halfway through. Let's backtrack to him. And I like, but she was into it.
So I watched something very different than Diabolik. I went to a friend's house because they had paid for the premiere access of Raya and the Last Dragon on Disney Plus. And did Matt cry? You better believe he did. But no, it's a fantastic film. It's really cool to watch a animated film where literally the only non-Asian voice actor is Alan Tudyk voicing a giant roly-poly bus.
Man, how did that guy go to be get like every awesome voice acting?
Like, it's so thing. Weird. It's so weird when I look at Alan Tudyk's like voice acting career and I'm like, so he was Hey Hey and Moana. Like, it's just like the weirdest, like,
that's amazing. I always forget about that. I think about him as KN04 or what's the, you know, he's that robot in
Rogue One. Yeah, he's the robot in Rogue One. He gets, yeah, it's weird for him to have all these voice acting roles, but he's also like a legitimately funny comedic actor. Yeah. Like,
oh, and he's
things.
Doing that Dr. Alien or something like that. Isn't that, he's doing that show on Sci-Fi?
I think that's,
I think it's 50% voice acting. I don't quite know how much of it is him and how much of it is his voice because it's an alien head. But yeah, like he's that's like his bread and butter now, which I think is so fucking cool.
Yeah, and it's got the girl from Star Wars in it.
Yeah. So what I want to stress with this one, yeah, so Raya has Rose from Star Wars as the voice of Raya.
Oh, cool.
And Awkwafina is the voice of the Last Dragon. Now, here's the thing. I am a fan of the original Mulan. But one of my beefs with Mulan is that Mushu is literally just Eddie Murphy doing his Eddie Murphy thing, and it doesn't feel like it belongs in that movie. Now, Awkwafina is definitely doing her Awkwafina thing throughout this.
Now, who's Awkwafina?
Someone who shouldn't be a voice actor, but she's very funny.
Did you see Crazy Rich Asians?
Yeah.
She's the best friend in Crazy Rich Asians.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So she's voicing this dragon, and she's very much like that character, like that high energetic character, but she just does the thing that Eddie Murphy never did with Mushu, with like, there's so much gravitas in her character. So like, she's goofy and she's excited that like she's back and living, but there is that element of like sadness and loss and importance and like drive that Mushu never had. Like, Mushu was just like,
you're putting a lot of smut on Mushu's name right now, and I don't like it.
He was basically just Eddie Murphy doing a stand-up routine for 2 straight hours when I watched
kid's
Mulan.
Kids stand-up routine,
yeah. It's like, I'm a dragon, bap-a-dip-a-dop-a-doop. Like, that's like my Eddie Murphy impression in that movie. But yeah, Raya Last Dragon. Is it worth the $30? Maybe not, but if you have a friend who has Disney Plus and already paid the $30 and is willing to give you their access code so you can watch it too, go for it. But it will be free in early June.
June 4th. Yeah.
So
I am waiting. And I respect you a little bit more because when I saw your post, I was like, the fucking nerve on him to spend $30 on this movie. But the fact that someone else did it.
Yeah.
Did you watch Flora and Ulysses?
No. Was it worth it?
No, I was going to ask you the same thing. I want to watch it. But it's got like Ben Schwartz in it.
Oh, really? I saw a squirrel and I was like, I can sit this one out.
it's got Ben Schwartz and I'm pretty sure it's got Garfunkel and Oates.
Oh.
Well, oh, man, fuck me in the ass because I love Jesus, those girls.
Yeah.
Ooh, I do. I will never forgive myself for missing my opportunities in L.A. with talking to those two more. But anyway, Scott, last one. What's something you checked out you want to talk about?
I just want to admit that Megan finally got me to watch Anastasia for the first time. The newest Disney princess besides the girl Raya in the dragon movie. It's fun. That movie's a fucking mess though. It's a great movie. Like it has great pieces and it's got great music. I mean, Richard Marx, thank you very much for, you know, being a fucking national treasure. I mean, and Christopher Lloyd just giving 110%. I love the 90s when Christopher Lloyd was like, I'm going to be a bad guy.
Yeah. It's weird to think about because like that is a movie that I watched and I really liked and I had no desire to watch again. And I think it's because like, it's almost a bunch of movies. You know what I mean? Like
it's four almost different movies. Yeah, you're not wrong. They could not limit themselves. If we're talking back on how Barillas couldn't limit themselves, I feel like the people that made Anastasia, like it could have used about three rewrites. And I think that, you know, getting rid of Hank Azaria's character, fucking, he sucks so bad. He's so annoying and so useless. Totally unnecessary. They were doing it to try and get that Disney money. The stuff that doesn't work in that is them just trying to ape Disney, which is so weird to me. But, like, I think that Christopher Lloyd is awesome. The fucking Hell song is great. When he's falling apart constantly is awesome. Like, lean into that. Have less of the whole journey with Anastasia and John Cusack's character, Dimitri. You know, it felt like the movie had so much that they were trying to do and say, and their pacing was wrong. I don't know. I mean, I feel like it just needed rewrites. Like, they could have gotten to everything and had it been much tighter. I mean, I know it's bullshit for someone like me who's never done a movie to criticize, but it's frustrating because it has so much good in it.
Yeah, it was towards the end of Don Bluth's, like, brief reign beating out Disney with his animated movies. Like, mm-hmm. He had this period where it was like, yo, fucking, this dude who quit Disney Animation because they wouldn't let him make his movie ideas is crushing Disney in the box office. Because he, like, left Disney because they didn't want to produce The Secret of Nim. So he produced The Secret of Nim, and then he did American Tale, Land Before Time, All Dogs Go to Heaven, and it was like every one of those movies outdid whatever Disney movie had come out that year. And then it was like right around like Rockadoodle, Thumbelina, and like Pebble and the Penguin. And then we like Anastasia was like the tail end of that. The last movie he did before it was like all done was Titan A.E., which is a really good movie, but it was like way too ahead of its time for what it was trying to be.
Yeah, it certainly was. I mean, I remember renting it, I think on video, maybe it was DVD, but pretty sure
like
it was video.
It's visually fantastic, but the world was like not ready for a movie like Titan A.E. yet. But yeah, good. I mean, Anastasia is fantastic. Once Upon a December is like one of the prettiest like princess songs from any movie, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, good stuff. We talked about a lot of stuff, not a ton about Day of the Dead, but we did talk about a lot of good stuff. Brian, you picked this one. Guys, a couple quick notes because we've only got one more episode before we get to episode 300. And I know y'all are super excited for episode 300. I know I'm super excited for episode 300. But we're going back to the 50s next week with one of my picks. But Brian had a pick. I had a pick. Last week, Scott had a pick. You guys get a pick in September, and I'm telling you this now in May because we're about to take a big-ass break from recording at this point, and we probably won't start until, you know, late May, early June. So get those submissions in at hmnpodcast@gmail.com between now and, let's say, late July, early August. We are going to go and comb through those. And if you're part of the Patreon and you're paying that $15 to get this video picture aspect on there, you also are going to get to vote on what movies we discuss for that September pick. Your votes are going to put into account what we pick. It's not going to be like your top four are going to be what we watch, but we will take your votes and use them as additional votes for the movies that we're looking at. So thank you so much. That didn't make any sense. I'll explain it better on the Patreon, I'm sure. But go and hit up our Patreon, patreon.com/HMN podcast, and email us your movie suggestions at hmnpodcast@gmail.com.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.